Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Danco, welcome back to the podcast. I'm so honored and grateful that you would spend not only 1 hour with me last year, but also another hour or more here today. I'm really grateful for that. Thank you for being here, my man.
Dude, I'm so excited. We've talked privately before this, like, of course, what led up to this, but no, I'm excited, man. I remember that last episode. It was a fun time, but a year is a long time. It hasn't seemed very long, but a lot has changed, and I'm ready to dive into this.
Yeah, what's changed? What do you think the biggest change is from you last year to you today?
Dude, this could be a very long answer. I'll start with a short answer, and then if you want to probe, feel free. But when I look at the past podcasts, whether it be yours or I did like a Hype Fury one and some others, and occasionally people will post clips of those, like even now. And it's like, dude, even just like my jawline, I lost so much weight, and it's insane. I see that picture, and it's like this pale guy. It doesn't look like me right now, of course. And so it baffles me, and I don't know if I want to share it or not, because it I just don't remember that person.
So you, at some point you decided, okay, I'm going to cut. I'm skinny fat right now. I want to be in the best shape of my life. And then you started pursuing that with reckless abandon. Like, what was the catalyst for you saying, I'm going to go down a different path?
Oh, man. So this is the long part of the story. So I've been like, fitness and health have been my passion, or a passion of mine, for since whenever I can remember. I remember going into, like, my mom and dad picked up P90X, like, when I was living with them, this like a decade ago, and they bought an adjustable dumbbell set to go along with that, because that's like all that was necessary. For some reason that interested me. I'd take it into my room and do like these just strung together workouts that wouldn't really do anything, but it was just fun. And that got me interested into like looking on YouTube. I joined after school weights in middle school, and that habit just carried on for the rest of my life. I love lifting and just choosing, like, paying attention to my diet and being conscious of that is one thing that I just enjoy doing. But last year, this was January of 2021. So the time that I'm referencing, so January 2021, leading up to that point, I had went through a breakup with my girlfriend at the time. We had been together for like 4 or 5 years. So it was a pretty big breakup. And I didn't have anywhere, like, I was still in a lease with her. I was living with her. And at that point, it was like 5 months of me sleeping on a rollout mattress in what was my office. So I was sleeping on a rollout mattress. She was sleeping in the other room. We were friendly, but it was just like a weird environment to be in. And this is also when COVID happened. So my gym habit kind of stopped because the gym closed down. I had never really been a fan of like outdoor workouts, but I could go to the park if I wanted to. And with that, my diet just slipped. Pretty much all of my fitness habits slipped, even though like I've been into this my entire life. I think this goes to show that even like the people that are most on it, they shit happens, man. Like you can get stuck in a rut. And I think I was oblivious to that the whole time. And I was just ordering Uber Eats, wasn't paying attention to my diet, wasn't moving at all, and ended up gaining 20, 30 pounds, whatever the COVID-15 was, or whatever they said it was. And at that point, like, I looked in the mirror and I didn't see anything wrong. That's the thing, is like I had become so conditioned into that specific lifestyle that how I looked and how I felt was normal to me at that point. And when our lease came to an end in January, I had been just thinking of like dropping everything and going to Mexico because everyone was talking about it. Like you always, you see the things on Twitter specifically where they're like, oh, there's no taxes here. Like you can go, everything's cheap, cheap living, cheap whatever. And I didn't have any ties, right? I didn't even have my own bed. I had a rollout mattress. I had a desk, like my laptop. That's all I had. So I'm like, yeah, logical decision. Use this as an advantage to like make a drastic shift. Bought the plane ticket to Mexico, went there, got to the Airbnb. And during this time, I had made the conscious decision of like, okay, yeah, I'm a bit overweight. I could probably drop 20, 30 pounds. Started paying attention to that. And that drastic of a change really screwed with me, like even more. Because I didn't have a routine in place, which is extremely important to me. I didn't have a home base, which I discovered is something that I needed. So that was a good choice to go there. But I ended up leaving Mexico like a week later just because I couldn't handle it. Like the Wi-Fi sucked, couldn't take client calls, couldn't do really anything. And so moved back. Got a place. And then that's when things like kicked into overdrive. That's when Modern Mastery started. That's when I got extremely serious about my diet again. That's when the gym opened back up and everything just like click, 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 click. And I don't know. Now we're here. Time has flown since that point, and I've just learned so much.
It's fascinating because you at when you came on the podcast last, you were just beginning that journey. You were right at the start of it. And now you're in a completely different place mentally, physically, but spiritually. How are you different? We spoke a little bit about spirituality, but I'm curious if there's any difference today from your perspective.
Yes. So the last time we spoke, I didn't really understand it very much, right? It was spirituality to me. It was something that I didn't fully understand, but I put my trust into it, like the practices, because I saw benefit from them. When I would read words on a specific page or from like heard words from a specific person on YouTube or just in general, that related to spirituality, it sounded true. And that's why I enjoyed it so much, is because it allowed me to kind of zoom out and just understand that none of my worries should be affecting me right now. And the change that has happened after diving into so many different ways of thinking, so like Zen Buddhism, spirituality in general, many different philosophies like Hermetic philosophy, Nietzsche's philosophy. I started to make these connections, and I think that's been a big theme of this year, is making connections and being able to kind of form my own philosophy. So now I see spirituality as a very practical lens for ordering your consciousness. And what I mean by that, and what I've been learning recently, the term is psychic entropy. And what that pretty much means is like entropy of the mind, like a disordered mind, not having anything to laser in on or focus on, or I guess another word for that would be mindset, right? Is the opposite of psychic entropy. So overthinking, overcomplicating things, just being trapped in your head, having that anxiety, that worry, is psychic entropy in a sense. And so me being able to take a step back and see spirituality as a lens that I can kind of attach at a specific point to order my mind in a way that will lead to a beneficial outcome in whatever situation I'm in is how I use it now. And then the other things like forming my own philosophy on specific things that may not agree with other people's philosophies or even spirituality as a whole also helps because of the experience I've had, the connections I've made through these things, and just what works for me, right? Because a lot of people don't vibe with the spiritual message, but there are similar teachings that are talked about from a different lens of perception that people can get behind and reap the same benefits, right? So one example, this isn't really like a mental example, but more so like meditation, for example. So the point of meditation is when you hear of meditation, you think, sit down with your thoughts, observe them, let them pass, gain deeper consciousness and awareness of your being, in a sense. And so seated meditation is a very good way of doing that. But what I've found works well for me and what I enjoy and like want to do is walk. I talk about this all the time. Like I tweet about it probably once a week minimum. It's kind of catching on and people are associating walks with me, which is really cool. But it's like, if I am in a bad mood, I go on a walk, right? And I focus on my breath. I take it very slow. I'm very conscious of like the space around me and how my steps feel when I am walking. But for other people, and I know this from my past self, is when I was with my ex, living with her a year ago, I hated walking, man. That wouldn't have changed a thing for me. Like if you told me to go on a walk instead of meditate, I would have told you like, no, that's the stupidest thing on earth. Why would I do that? And now it's like, I see the benefit in that because, I have an intention, a goal, and kind of a desired outcome with my walk, right? The automatic decision to just go on a walk at a specific time of day to maintain that mental clarity and, like reduce that psychic entropy is why I go on a walk, but other people may not see that benefit. So it's the whole like lens of perception, ways of doing things and what works for a specific person to accomplish, that desired outcome of ordered consciousness in a sense. Mm.
What do you think's happening there? You know, it's fascinating when you have one thing that you do, walking, and in one scenario, you hate it, and in another scenario, it's something you enjoy so much. What is that?
I know exactly why. It's an intrinsic hierarchy of goals compared to an extrinsic hierarchy of goals. And this is one thing that I've learned very recently, like within the past month, this whole hierarchy of goals thing is that this is the reason why people do what they do. So if you go to college and let's say that it's not your intrinsic decision, like you don't really want to do it, but you do it anyway, it's because someone else has laid out a hierarchy of goals for you to go and do that. And there's clarity, right? There's certainty there. So it's the only logical option to do that because it's like first step, you go to school, you educate yourself on specific topics, you get ready to go to college, like macro and micro, or I guess the entire hierarchy of goals for like society as a whole is go to school, go to college, pick something that you would enjoy doing, get a job, retire, right? That's a certain hierarchy of goals that is attainable for most people. And relating to going on a walk, the a year ago, that had nothing to do with my goals. I didn't have goals related to that. But when my ex at the time wanted me to go on a walk with her, I couldn't find enjoyment in it because I was following her hierarchy of goals, right? And she loved it. She loved every second of it. So now me having an actual intention and having it relate to goals and actually serve a purpose in my life, that's why I enjoy it so much. Because not only is it some form of meditative activity that I can do for mental clarity, but it is also dedicated time where I can listen to podcasts, I can listen to books, like I can consume the information that I've been waiting to consume. And that is much, it's frictionless for me to do that rather than sit outside and read a book, right? But for some people that works, right? Because it aligns with their hierarchy of goals. They enjoy doing that. And so that's the main thing is the walks for me have many different purposes and they align with so many different goals in my life that it's just, it doesn't take a second thought. If I'm bored, go on a walk. If I just want to read a new book, go on a walk. Like it's automatic decision.
Yeah. Did you see the study that I shared maybe last month on walking? That was pretty wild to me, where there was an inverse correlation between all-cause mortality and the amount of steps you took daily.
I did see that.
it's just a crazy idea that there's no, according to this study, there was no end of walking helping somebody. And that walking was also three times more likely if you took 2,700 steps versus if you smoked a pack of cigarettes a day, you were three times more likely to die from walking 2,700 steps. Wild. It's wild stuff.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So it's like, it's crazy. And it's like, I don't think we really know how beneficial walking really is for us. Mm-hmm. And so when was the moment where it clicked for you?
Oh, it was at the start of the cut. So it's funny because I went from hating walking to going to Mexico, coming back, and then loving walking because I knew that, one, I'm not a huge fan of like scheduled cardio, and I've been in the fitness game for a while, so I know that the fat loss comes in phases and that eventually like I would have to decrease my calories or increase my activity via steps or cardio. So I kind of started that off on the right foot because this is another reason why walking aligns so well with my goals is not only the activity aspect of it. So I'm burning more calories at like having a higher net energy expenditure, but also it takes my mind off of food. So when I wasn't, like when I had meals scheduled and I would get hungry, and this worked for nicotine too, when I wanted to quit nicotine, it's like, if I have that urge to eat or like put in a Zyn, then it's like, okay, time to go on a walk. Like that's my decision rather than giving into that urge. And then it just became habit for me because I started off small. Like I do laps, like one lap around my apartment complex. And it's like, I actually quite enjoyed that. Maybe I should throw in an audiobook and go a bit longer. And then I do two laps and then three laps. And now I'm walking a minimum of like 20,000 steps a day. Wow. And it's, I don't know, best habit I've ever formed.
Yeah, so I love that about when you have a negative habit or a habit you want to override, replacing it with something you actually want to do that's beneficial to you. Are there any other tips you could... Right now, I'm dealing with this gambling habit. I'm really trying to get out of my life. And I love the idea of like, if I have an urge to gamble, go on a walk instead. Is there anything else that comes to mind to help in that sort of situation?
Yes. So this is kind of an iffy piece of advice because there's, I'm sure you've experienced this. I've experienced this. Many people have, where like the whole monk mode, phenomena where you kind of just like get pulled into this rabbit hole of stuff and you're like, okay, yeah, I need to like go all in on this project right now. And that makes it also 10 times easier to do things because instead of, say, thinking about food or thinking about nicotine or gambling, you're just so immersed in work and you know that there's more work to do. So you can kind of just keep yourself busy with work. So that's one thing to me. But then the weird thing is that the monk mode kind of comes in cycles. You can't really control it. You can control it to an extent, but it seems like it happens once a year for me. Just like at the same time, like when summer comes around, it's time to go all in on a specific project. But I think that can be taken back. Like the intensity can be dialed down. and you can have like a side project or something that like captures your, that you're curious about, right? It all starts with curiosity, and then either having something to educate yourself on or like a project to build out that you've already educated yourself on to bring your attention to. And the thing with that is it should align or at least benefit like what you're currently building, because you're passionate about the podcast, you're passionate about other things. So it's like, how can I tie the dopamine that comes from curiosity, education, and building something in the real world to bring more utility to what I'm currently passionate about? And then this is where I feel like a lot of people get the passion thing wrong, is that you don't necessarily have to be passionate about that specific thing, but if it aligns with something and contributes to something that you are deeply passionate about, then it's like a constant reminder of like, you're able to use that passionate energy to pour into another area because you know it will improve the thing you're passionate about.
I like that. Does that help? That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, definitely. Speaking of passions and projects, what's going on with the Art of Focus? You created this great Twitter account, twitter.com/theartoffocus. Mm-hmm. And I just go through some of these and it's just like a book being written in front of my eyes. There's not too many little snippets of the book out there, but tell me about the project. What's going on with it?
Yes. So a bit of backstory. This is kind of I don't know if this is a good common theme, but I'd been toying with, like, I'd always had a dream of writing a book one day, because books, they've impacted my life on so many different levels. It's like, one day I will write a book. When that day is, I don't know. And when I started writing the book, it was with another girl, and we had just went to Costa Rica, and we spent the time there, and we decided to end things and come back. And so that's when the book writing started. It's like in the other time when I went to Mexico and came back, it's like Modern Mastery was born. And then the other time when it's like I went to Costa Rica and came back, the Art of Focus started. And I just thought that was a funny connection to make. I don't think that's a sustainable way of starting new projects, but it's interesting. And so now I'm about 200 pages deep into the book. Wow. And I know I have a lot more to go, but right now it's kind of on the back burner because I hit a point where all of these concepts I was trying to articulate, they flowed really well. But then I hit a point where it's like, I don't have the experience I need to write what I want to write. And this is the beautiful thing about projects in general, or even writing in general, is having something to tie those experiences back to, right? Because as I was writing the book, I became so much more aware of just little things that I would have never became aware of, because it was the answer. It was like, I have this thing munching in the back of my head on, for this specific section of the book or project or whatever you're creating, or even Twitter, like a personal brand. And it's like, oh, that's it. That's the perfect sentence I need to put into the book. That's the perfect idea for the tweet, or for whatever. And so that's kind of how it is now. I've set it down for a bit, but I have the outline. I have some of my ideas there. And now I'm just like going through life and building out other projects and taking careful note of those experiences so I can come back and articulate that better.
Dude, what you just said is so important, and I've never really considered it until this moment, which is like having a main thing, a hub where you could direct examples that happen in your own life is so important. This podcast is that for me, but also Twitter, just jotting down ideas. But to have a book where you could look at the things that happen in your life as a lens through which to view them is just such a powerful insight. And I think comedians have this with relating everything back to their stand-up set. Yeah. And I think musicians have this with, you know, they have their life experiences, they draw them into songs. So just a fascinating concept of like, there are things that happen in your life, but are you capturing them? Are you being able to share them in the future? Really cool idea. So I want to pull out a quote from The Art of Focus, which really hit me, and I'd just love to hear your thoughts about them. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing about all of this is the paradox of surrender. Fighting to find your purpose will result in no purpose. Fighting to be more productive will result in procrastination. Fighting to be happy will result in being sad. The key is to let go, detach, surrender, have faith. Once you do, the spiritual realm will present itself to you, whether you perceive it as the spiritual realm or not. Flow with life and life will appear. Live with purpose and purpose will appear. The underlying significance will come to light when you stop trying to find it. The things that actually matter in life always come unexpectedly. Ah, so beautiful, man.
Thank
beautiful.
You.
Any thoughts on that passage?
So this can be tied back to what I mentioned earlier about like how viewing spirituality has become a lens or a stepping stone or a tool for me now. And a lot of that, what I learned from is what I learned from like Alan Watts and Zen Buddhism, where it's just surrender. It's flowing with life. And it's that alone, one, made me realize so much of like why I think a lot of advice is kind of, it's kind of not useless. How do I put this? The times where I got the most done, where I was the most productive, was not a time when I wanted to be the most productive. It just happened, right? And So that led to another question. It's like, what is causing this? And so then I dove into, I didn't really, it's not like I could find this information. It kind of was just like presented to me. I'm pretty sure Joey recommended The Art of Impossible by Stephen Kotler. And I read through that and it started to make sense. I'm like, this is like, why is this not talked about more? And it's the entire book is absolutely amazing. But the first two chapters alone, where it talks about the five intrinsic drivers, which is curiosity, passion, purpose, autonomy, and mastery. So those things, it like one leads to another, where you're curious about specific interests, you dive into those, you make connections because you're learning a lot and you have intention behind your actions. And then purpose, assigning purpose to whatever that interest is, like how it has some utility, how it can affect the world at large and solve your own problems, that gives purpose to those actions. And then autonomy, the next logical step, so you can do these things more and go all in on this in a sense, or at least like have the freedom to choose when you do those specific things. So you can do that at a job or on your own if you want. But autonomy and trying to free up your time and being able to create your own schedule, I feel like is very important. And then the mastery aspect. So whether it be, it doesn't necessarily have to be one skill. I think of it as like one domain that you want to master, because there's the whole, like jack of all trades, master of none, master of one. I forget the original quote, but in my eyes now, we're kind of entering another Renaissance era with the internet. One, because this is kind of my theory that I've been trying to write about, is that we have a limited amount of information that we can take in and use to apply to real world projects. Right? And the information we take in is the things that we are learning or mastering. But with this whole internet and people creating courses and just new forms of education coming about, the information, like what it would have took to learn X topic then has been condensed. It's like a zip file in a course now. So you can learn about one specific thing so much faster than we used to be able to. Therefore, you can become that jack of all trades, and within specific areas of the domain you're trying to master, you can become like an expert or a specialist in many different things when that just wasn't possible earlier on. So it's like you're getting this condensed knowledge, and creators, the ones that are taking this, adding on personal experience, making connections, it's like going exponential, where that condensed knowledge is being added on to, refined, and then condensed again. And then it's going even further, condensed again. And I mean, you read Naval's thread on how to get rich without getting lucky. Each of those tweets has so much depth and information behind it that it's just insane that you can take that in with one simple sentence, right? And so it's like that is continuing to grow. So that's why I think we're entering this new like Renaissance era where we can be jack of all trades. We can master one domain while having a lot of knowledge in specific areas in that domain. And that's what breeds like creativity. That's what makes you stand out as a brand. That's your niche, is like the things that you are a quote unquote expert in, those and how those interconnect is your niche in a sense. And that's what you educate people on. And that's what you create that condensed information on. And I think you'll like this, but as a whole, that's kind of raising the collective human consciousness from a new earth, is like you are advancing how much information can be stored in one's consciousness from like a much more efficient, in a much more efficient way.
Yeah.
Like you can make that click happen so much faster, whether it be spiritually, mentally, financially, physically.
Yeah. Okay. So the two books mentioned, just for people listening who, I know when books are mentioned in podcasts, I like when it's mentioned again, The Art of Impossible by Stephen Kotler and A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle.
I would add one more. So
please,
the Art of Impossible also references Flow by Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. It's a long name. If you just look up Flow, you'll be able to tell by the long name. But once you go through The Art of Impossible, that's kind of a condensed version and has many different things it talks about. And then Flow is like, if you want to understand the whole like consciousness and hierarchy of goals thing that I'm talking about, that's where that really comes into play.
Cool. Awesome. So on the topic of just, it's incredible to me that the information barrier is so low, and information is free basically. And so you have course, you have programs. What is the value of a course, of a program, when all the information is free?
Oh, so, okay. So when it's free, I have different views on courses as a whole from other people. But in terms of that, I think Alex Hormozi? I think Hormozi said it best in one of his tweets where he was like, give away information, sell implementation. So
I love that.
Yeah, he simplified it. He condensed it so well. But it's like you give out as much information, that's content. It's like the whole pillars of entertain, educate, inspire. You give out your experiences, your failures. You give out everything that's in your head. But when it comes to like map making or creating that, I think a lot of people would just say specific knowledge. Like, here's how you do, here's how you get from A to B in the least amount of steps possible. That's how I feel like most people would describe a course. But I'm trying to take a different approach because I've also heard a lot of people say, I just want the actionable advice. I don't want all the fluff. But the fluff is what changed everything for me, man. Like I needed that awareness. And I call it map making, right? So here's point A, here's point B. And this is like the straightest path to get there. But what does the surroundings look like? Like, what are the obstacles that you can overcome? Like, paint a picture for me. What is a possible thing that may hit me? Why is this the best way to get from A to B? And it's like, you have to paint, in my eyes, you have to paint the picture of the map to make people understand and give that context behind why they're doing a specific thing. And that's why I prefer like books, as my like favorite content source, is because it paints a picture of everything. It gives me, it's like the one sentence that tells me how to make $1 million. Like, great, I know how to make $1 million now, but why? Like, why would that be the most enjoyable and fun way to do it? What's the philosophy behind this? And all of that different stuff, like it, that means a lot to me. And from what I've noticed and the people I've interacted with, it really isn't as simple as tell me exactly what to do and I'll do it, because I could tell people exactly what to do and most of them won't. But if I give the theory, if I give the fluff behind it, they may find that one specific sentence or way of looking at things that will make them actually do that.
What I love about what you just did is you took something that is common and widely not questioned, is actual advice, not fluff. And you just said, no, let's look at it through the opposite point of view. And just that framework is so powerful. And it gets me so excited because you're so right. It's like the extra information is what gives something nuance that you could then understand better. And if you call to one person, that might be fluff. To another person, that might be the single thing that changes their perspective or idea. If a robot tells you what to do, like, that's going to be great, but you're more likely to understand it if it's a human being who's similar to you, who's faced similar struggles to you. So right. On that point, I would love to go back in your life and ask about your dad lending you money and entering depression after losing it.
Yeah. Oh, man. So this was, I honestly don't have the number at the top of my head. I just say seven. Like I say that I failed at seven different business models. And with this one, this was like midway, right? I learned web design. I learned SEO. I bought a Facebook ads course. I bought a drop shipping course and I created a drop shipping store. I tried to make money with that, didn't really see it. And so to me, the next logical step was like, okay, the reason this isn't working is because it's drop shipping. So I need to buy my own product. And at the time I was deep into coding. Like I still kind of have it. Like I wear black all the time, like the creative attire, like hipster kind of creative fashion was my sense then. And so was my like aesthetic, right? So I'd be following people where they have like a really cool computer setup, a nice keyboard and other things. And I'm like, okay, I like this, but what are these people doing, right? What's a problem with developers? What sticks out to me? It was blue light glasses. And so I started looking on Alibaba and other places. That's the only place I knew where I could find manufacturers. And I started chatting with them and was like, hey, how much would it cost to get this many of this model sent to me? There was some back and forth. And it ended up costing like $3,000 or $4,000, right? And I'm in college and working a part-time job at this point, and all of my part-time job money is going to rent and food and gas and necessities. And so I called my dad and I'm like, hey, I have this amazing idea. You know, I gave him the pitch where it's like, I have this amazing idea. I'm going to sell blue light glasses to developers. Here's why it's going to work. And I'll pay you back as soon as I get the money back. And so him, he probably like didn't believe me at all, but he was still like extremely generous. I love my dad. I couldn't thank him more for actually believing in me, or at least like sending me that money to try and test this out and just allow myself to fail in a sense. So I ordered the product and then I started, I used the extra money that he sent me for paid ads and started running those. I paid for some influencer shout outs on Instagram. I ended up selling nothing. And wow. this was like, the blue light glasses shipping from China, it takes a long time for them to get to you. So at this point, I'm not even like too interested in selling them, right? The emotion had faded. And so I have these like boxes upon boxes of blue light glasses that I want to sell. I'm investing money in ads. I'm paying for these shout outs. I'm spending a lot of money just praying that like a bunch of people buy these things, and nobody bought them. And at that point, it's like just the, like, that's when the doomsday mindset came into play where this isn't going to work. Why am I doing this? I can't spend more money. I haven't even like, why would I spend more money when I'm already this deep in debt and nobody's buying these? It doesn't make sense to spend more money. And I also don't have any more way of sending traffic to them. So it's like, this is a lose-lose situation. And so for the next week, I was like at work, just like going through the motions in my head, like pissed. I wanted to give up on everything. I wanted to quit the job. I wanted to quit work. Like I had no motivation to do anything. I didn't want to go to the gym. It just didn't make sense to like continue on with things when like, dude, psychology can fuck you up. I'll say that. That's where I'll leave it. But after
thought
that
spiral,
yes. Like a week after, I called my dad, and I was dreading this call. That's another thing that was messing with me. It's like, how am I going to tell my dad that I lost all of this money, and there's practically no way in my head that I can recoup it and pay him back? And so I called him. He's like, no, like it's okay. Like there's nothing else you can do about this. So like, get it out of your mind for now. It's okay. You don't have to pay me back right now, but you've learned this coding stuff, right? And the whole reason you learned the coding stuff was to, be able to get a job without a degree. And it's like, you haven't finished school yet, but what would happen if you started applying for these jobs and, like built out your portfolio and did other things? And so that wasn't like, it wasn't something I wanted to do because I was trying so hard. Like there was a goal in my head to avoid a nine to five by all means possible before I graduated. And so given the situation, I had to put that aside and I started applying. I ended up getting hired at this web design agency and worked there for like close to a year. And during that time, I had picked up some information from them. I'm like, oh, this is why this agency works. And so took my coding skills, started doing projects for friends just for fun. And because I had kind of like systemized my workflow so much when I got there that I could work for like 2-3 hours at the job and then do whatever I wanted at my desk. So the rest of the time, it's like, I have a job. Now I need to get out as fast as possible. So that's what I did, is like I'd spend 2-3 hours on work, or I would procrastinate it till the end of the week. And I would just work on like the freelancing business. And so with all of my time and energy going towards that, that saw success pretty quickly. And then along the way, and why I believe that like the fluff is important and like why strictly actionable advice may not get you to a specific point is because all of my past failures, all of the past skills that I had learned with all of those different things that I tried out, they all played a role in making that web design stuff a success. So it's like, when I think of that, when I think of someone that puts information in a very streamlined way, it's like, okay, well, like, what are the failures that led to this? Like, what are all of the skills that are coming into play here that give you that unique advantage to make this work perfectly? And that's something I'm like dedicated on dissecting, is because you hear all the time of where people buy courses and they do nothing with them, or they try for a bit and they don't see results. So it's like, how can, this is always at the top of my head, is like, what can I say, or what can I inform people on that will get them either results or to just take action, right? Mm-hmm. Because I see, this is a kind of different example, but when you see people, especially on TikTok or something, where you see in the comments and people are like closed-minded, they have that like the limiting beliefs, kind of like a toxic victim mentality. It's like, if I could say one thing that would completely change this person's perspective, what would it be? And that's kind of what I'm doing with Twitter. I don't think I'll ever come across that one sentence or that string of words that will make a bunch of people take specific action. But I would say that that is one of my secrets, is like, how can I string these words together that will impact people the most?
I saw you tweeted about, when doing research for this, I saw a tweet from you that was like, I'm going to bully you into walking yeah. more, becoming the best version of yourself, starting a business you love. And I was just like, yeah, like that. And it did incredibly well. And it's like, I can imagine you asking that question of like, what can I say in this moment to get you to do the things that are good for you? And you're just like, I'm going to bully you into it. I thought that was
great. Yeah. Yeah. If I can't piece the sentences together, it's just like, I'm going to yell at you until you do it. So we'll see.
Yeah. Speaking of Twitter, you recently hit 100,000 followers on Twitter. Congrats on that. Was that a big moment for you? Did you care? Did it impact your psyche? Was it a moment of reflection? How did that feel from your perspective?
This may not be a popular answer, but it didn't really like affect me. Like it's been a part of the process. Like I knew it was going to happen at some point. And when it happened, it's like, okay, cool. Back to work, back to tweeting. It's like it's weird because I know that when I look at a brand with a lot of followers, it's like, oh wow, they're way ahead of me in like every way possible. And it's self-comparison, right? But then I think of that and it's like, I look at my own page and it's like 100,000 followers. Like I know who I am. Like I'm just a guy that is trying to improve myself and go to the gym and like doing these things that are very, very normal to me. They're very familiar. It's like, if your head was planted into mine and you had all of the same conditioning and whatever it may be, it'd be normal to you too. And I think of that as well. Like if I were to go into someone else's body, eventually, if I was in that environment for long enough, it would be normal to me, right? And so the whole like 100,000 followers, it's great. Like I am very grateful for everyone that follows me. And I love interacting with them, man. Like, especially in the community, everyone's so cool. Like I zoom out and it's like, how did I attract these people with like this cool of personalities? Like when I get on a call with someone, it's like, I don't see these people in real life. Why am I not meeting these people in real life? But online, it's like, everyone is so cool, man. Yeah. And that also makes me take a step back and like reflect before I judge people online, is because when you see a tweet and you make that, like that, you have that negative reaction really fast just because they're polarizing or they say something you don't agree with. It's like, if you met them in real life and you had a one-on-one conversation, you guys would get along. You really would. You'd have a great time and you'd probably connect on many different things. And if you see that tweet and you just block everything out and just immediately view them as like an enemy or someone that you dislike, like you're closing off a lot of potential to not only learn, but connect with someone who is on the same path as you, right? You're doing the same things, and a lot of people in everyday life aren't doing that.
Yeah. Well, speaking on the growth of your social platforms, I saw you had one TikTok that went absolutely bonkers with Grayscale, and is like very common knowledge on Twitter that like has been put out for years, right? Like Grayscale your phone. And I saw this go viral on TikTok, and I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. So what was that increase of attention on TikTok like?
Oh man. After a while, I just blocked it out. I ended up hiring someone because I don't like, I'm saying all this stuff about don't judge people, but man, it's hard when you're like getting attacked in the comments. It's like, I'm closing TikTok. Like, I'm hiring someone. I don't ever want to be on TikTok again. But the thing about that is it went viral. Like, I've never been exposed to, what was it? It's like 2.3 million views now. That's a lot, man. I've never had a tweet go that crazy. I don't even think I probably had close to that many impressions in a month on Twitter, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. It's nuts. And like opening it up and just the first thing you see is a negative comment. It's like, okay, well, yeah, don't want to log on there again. And, but the thing about that, man, it's funny is I like to break down like why things worked, and I might make a YouTube series out of this and like breaking down why specific content or brands do really well is, and with that tweet, it's like, I had the background where I feel like for some people, just me in general sitting in the back on my phone could be very like polarizing. Like that could cause a lot of like reactions immediately. And then in terms of the actual phone thing, I didn't tell people exactly how to do it in the post. I told them how to do it in the comments. So a lot of people are automatically commenting and boosting exposure where it's like, how do I do this on Android? How do I do this on iPhone? And then, what was the other thing? There's just a bunch of different things like that where some people have already seen it. And so they comment, oh, this doesn't work, or, oh, this works, or, oh, I did this and I already hate my phone. Or they'll come back in a week and they're like, I tried this. I really don't like my phone. And then there's some people commenting like, oh no, like, why would you not want color? And it's like, you're experiencing all of these different levels of awareness pertaining to that post. And so it's really interesting. Like, that's one reason I like this whole social media thing as a whole is like, how can you craft something for not only maximum impact, but maximum engagement? Like, what word can you leave out that makes people comment or want to know more or different things like that? And it's impossible to, the other thing that's fun about it is that it's like, you can do that forever because there is no perfect way of writing that content. It's just completely up to you and having fun with it.
Yeah. I think of Atomic Habits with James Clear, him writing something really specific where somebody, the headline being Atomic Habits, oh, I know what that means, or I don't know what that means, but I have habits, so it's very important for me to learn what that is. But so it's specific, but also broad. And it sounds like you did that very similarly with that viral TikTok. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. I'm curious about your thoughts on media in general. We spend so much time on it. I didn't realize that media was a passion of mine 2 years ago, right? I started this podcast, but when I look back, dots connecting backwards, I'm really interested in how people communicate with people and how to best do that and how to go about it. And so I'm curious about your thoughts on the media you consume and the media and media in general.
Yeah. So my thoughts on this have changed quite a bit, mostly because like intention and purpose again, where I don't really scroll the timeline too much anymore, mainly because like I know what I need to work on at any given moment, or I know what I need to be doing in order to kind of maintain my schedule or just mental clarity. And going on the timeline usually doesn't help with that. But for people that want to expose themselves to a new way of doing things. So let's say, like, man, if I got sucked into like money and self-improvement Twitter earlier, I'd probably be further ahead than I am now, is because you're exposing yourself to this echo chamber of people that are ahead of you and dishing out information. And whether you like it or not, you're going to be exposed to tweets and other content that have the potential of like making something click in your head. And so this has made me develop some part of The Art of Focus, the book, in where if you don't know what you're interested in or what you are supposed to be passionate about, or like developing that passion and other things, I call it the passion process, where first, the first parts of the book are very important, where you have to be aware of your perceptions and like how you view things, and you need to kind of work on being open-minded and practice that, because that opens up room for curiosity and actually noticing specific things. And so when it comes to like doing something for yourself, as opposed to like, oh, you need to go to college and you should probably learn this because it's the most profitable and you should apply to these jobs. It's like, if you want to do something for yourself, you need to become very well versed in a skill or an interest, just like interest area, like fitness or mindset or spirituality. I would consider that an interest over like a hard skill, like web design, email marketing, etc. So you need to become interested in one of those things, or you just need to be open to learning about one that you have a slight interest in. And so the first thing I recommend is one book, like a bestseller, right? So if you're interested in habits, buy Atomic Habits, and you'll get a great rundown of habits in general, and it'll make so many connections for you. And you'll feel, if you don't feel that dopamine or like have that excitement that comes from reading it, then it may be time to pursue something else. But I tell people to give themselves a month, right? So give themselves a month of one, reading that book, two, picking a long form resource. So a podcast or a blog, right? So if there's a habits podcast, listen to that when you're on a walk, and it'll make more connections. And that's pattern recognition. So momentum, more dopamine, makes you more excited about learning that thing. And then there's an article, so you could find, like, again, James Clear, like Atomic Habits paired with his blog would probably be very powerful. And then the next thing is a short form resource, or like many people. So on Twitter, you follow three people that are talking about habits, right? And that'll make even more connections, because it's like bite-sized pieces of information. And when you're reading the book, you have something to tie it to. So you're like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense to me now. And then at that point, yeah, it's like, if you are very interested in this and you're always excited to learn more about it, then you should choose an outlet. Like you should have a way of teaching this, because then again, it's all about the connections and pattern recognition and building that momentum. So even if you just start a Twitter account without the intention of monetizing yet or seeing some form of profit, it's like just focus on teaching and teaching what you're learning. Because I think Dickie Bush said it best, where he doesn't write to explain, he writes to understand. And that really hit me, because especially with writing the book, it's like I didn't learn as much about like spirituality or this whole passion process thing or other things until I started writing about it and tried organizing it in a way, and kind of having to fumble through the parts that I didn't understand until I connected that dot via a real world experience or the book I was reading or the people I was following on social media. And once that solution that just clicks, it's the perfect piece of the puzzle, and you get that burst of clarity, it's like, oh, like that's the greatest feeling in the world, man.
Yeah. It's like everything connects in that moment. And going on the passion process, why do you think that the blue light glasses store, e-commerce store that you created failed? Because I had a very similar experience of starting e-commerce store, buying a bunch of merch, being so excited about it, then forgetting about it 2 months later. And so I'm curious, is there something you could have done for that store to make it work? And if so, like, how would you go about making that a success today?
Yes. I'll start with yes. There definitely would be a way for me to like maintain that momentum or maintain that excitement about blue light glasses per se.
Yeah.
But the thing is I wasn't passionate about blue light glasses specifically at that time. And that's what I was expecting to be passionate about. Now, if I were to come back to it now, I would use my passion for productivity, performance, just overall like health and how those like help, how those affect it to fuel like me trying to build and create that. And rather than giving up on it, I may have started like a blog or an Instagram page or a Twitter page where I can write about all this research. I have something to dive into and learn about and can start to connect the dots and kind of form my own, let's say, productivity philosophy for these web developers and like add more depth to the blue light glasses and have it form the brand as a whole. And my marketing message behind that brand is like, how can I make these people more productive through what I'm talking about via the blog or the Twitter, while at the same time being able to tie that to the blue light glasses so they have that true utility backed with a passionate brand or message or philosophy behind why you should use them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. For me, one question that's been really helpful is, could I see myself doing this in 10 years? And that doesn't mean you necessarily have to do it for 10 years. But just to have that idea in your head of like, oh, if this was a 10-year process, would I still be doing what I'm doing today? And when I started those projects in the past, it's so often been so much excitement, so much joy in the beginning. And then that was like one day. And then the next day I was on to something else. And I think that's happened less and less as I've grown up. Just you get to know yourself better. Has that also been the case for you?
Yeah. Quite a bit so. Like it's become much easier to like ignore the things that aren't really going to serve what you've built a lot of this stuff around.
Yeah,
that makes sense. The thing for me there though, like the caveat or like context I want to give there is that I feel like a lot of young people, myself included, my previous self included, when I see these people that are successful and they know like, okay, I need to ignore this, I need to double down on this, like they know what to do. When you're first starting out, you have to try a lot of different things. Like it's just absolutely necessary. Because that's how you, that's like the most effective way to broaden your awareness of these different things. It's like, I had no idea that copywriting existed before I dove into web design. It's like web design is very common and it's like, oh yeah, that sounds like a creative kind of hobby. And so I dove into that and it's like, okay, why isn't this working? And then I started following other people. I don't know the exact steps, but like one thing led to another simply because I took action on the web design stuff. And then a piece of like copywriting advice came across my page and I'm like, why are people talking about like the legal copyright on Twitter in this context? And so I looked up copywriting more. I started following these accounts. I dug through their tweets and I'm like, oh, this is the piece I was missing. And so I started looking at copywriting stuff. And then that led to like marketing, sales. And it's like this domino effect simply because you took action and dove into something that you were aware of at that time. And then you became more aware of this like ocean of things that you can learn. And then from there, you test things out and you, as like the famous saying goes, you throw shit at a wall and see what sticks. And then what sticks, you continue working on that and really do what we talked about earlier in the podcast. And then one thing leads to another. And you kind of wake up and you don't even realize that you spent so much time in one specific domain and that that's become your main thing. And you just know what to do next.
Yeah. It's very rare that you have the specific domain in the beginning. And right. Mr. Beast is a great example of that actually happening, where it's like, YouTube, I'm so focused on YouTube. YouTube is my life. YouTube is the thing. And I'm not even convinced that his thing is actually YouTube. Actually, I think like it's media or communication, and it didn't matter what the actual platform was. But what do you think of Mr. Beast?
I've only seen a few of his videos, but he's an absolute genius when it comes to like everything that we talk about on Twitter or that we see. It's like, you capture attention, you hold attention, and then you convert attention in some way. And he just does that. Like, I do feel like that is a big part of his, like what he's passionate about. And YouTube is just a vessel to pursue that and practice it. Is like, how can I grab people's attention, hold it for the longest amount of time possible through value and entertainment and inspiration and all of this other stuff, and also get paid for it in a way that benefits the other person? And then he just fuels his YouTube back with that money. So it's like, he's a manifestation of the whole find enjoyment in the process, is because he just does it to do it, right? Yeah. he spends all of his money just so he can continue doing that specific thing.
Yeah. That's also been a useful question for me, is if I won the lottery today, what would I be doing? And the answer is talking to you right here. So
it's nice. Yeah. It's
good. But on the process of maintaining attention and keeping attention, what have you learned in your process of gaining over 100,000 followers that you've learned about keeping attention?
Storytelling, but not in the way of like a fiction story. Like a fiction story, of course, is a great example of what a story entails, but a story itself doesn't have to have like physical characters. It doesn't have to have a physical setting. It's more so, what is the problem? How do you overcome it? And what is the solution, right? That's copywriting in general, but it's also how people make sense of things, right? That's what human understanding is the story, not only that we tell ourselves, like that's how we stay motivated, is because a hierarchy of goals implies the how to be the hero of your own story. But at the same time, like in terms of what brings meaning to life, is that there is some kind of protagonist, right? There's like, what are you trying to avoid? What's the lifestyle that you don't want to live? What are the obstacles that you're willing to face head on and have that battle and like reap the benefits of actually doing that, both mentally, physically, whatever it may be, right? And so with that, it's like, how, in terms of holding the attention, it's like, how are you walking people through that battle of good and evil with many different ways of like saying that? Because it doesn't have to have the stories, right? One simple sentence of a tweet could remind people of either the battle they're facing or what they have done to overcome a specific battle, or how to overcome a battle that they're facing right now, or even just ammunition to overcome a battle that they're going to face later in life.
Makes sense. Are there any particular resources that you found helpful to get better at storytelling?
I haven't read any on like books. I haven't read specific books on storytelling. The I don't say this enough in how much this habit has actually helped me, but every single night on YouTube, I will type in Alan Watts. I'll find one of his lectures. They're like an hour to 2 hours long. I'll find one of the lectures and I'll just play it. I have YouTube Premium so I can like turn off my phone so I don't have to look at the screen. And that's how I fall asleep. And I'll be listening. Like it's kind of meditative where you're putting all of your attention on what he's saying. And like just the way he speaks in metaphors the entire time. And he tells stories and it's like, okay, how, like, what is he saying here? What is the lesson that I can pull from this? And I think that alone, just me doing that for a good amount of time, not only has that made me like more mindful as I go about my days, but it's also like, how can I use metaphors to explain things better and become a better writer? Just because like, I love the way that Alan Watts puts things.
Wow. That is something that has popped up again and again of an idea that, and a person that I want to explore deeper, Alan Watts. Are there any particular videos you love or you come back to often from Alan Watts?
Yes. So Alan Watts, You Are God, Part 1 and Part 2. Those are like, I don't know how he does it, man. Like that's one thing that has been a soft goal of mine for the longest time, is just being able to articulate things and like have depth behind the words that I'm saying. Yeah. And like, he is a prime example of that. It's like, how does he do it? It's like, you listen to those and it's like, how in the world do you, again, string these words together to put across this message that doesn't really have any meaning, but just like makes you, you're speechless, right? Like you don't even care if it has meaning or not. You're just like, wow, this sounds true. Like this is poetic. This is beautiful. The way that he's doing it's art. His words are art. And The Wisdom of Insecurity is also a good book that I know a lot of people recommend. But dude, like for those listening, you as well, Danny, get The Wisdom of Insecurity and just read the first line. The first line made me stop. Like I couldn't read further. I read the first line and I'm like, I was like, how did you do this? I just closed the book and sat there for like 5 minutes. And I'm like, how did you even come up with this? It's crazy.
That's exactly how I felt when reading A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. Just like, oh my God, there's so much here. And Power of Now, from what I've heard you talk about, it was the same thing where you looked at the things that you didn't underline and you said to yourself, oh wow, like I actually missed this part. And I think it's such an important goal for a writer or communicator, is like your words to hit differently at different points in someone's life, and for them to be able to see the same thing and read it two different ways or multiple different ways after being able to consume it. So
yeah,
it's awesome. Well, Dan, this has been a true pleasure and honor. Anything else you'd like to touch on? Anything else you'd like to, any topics to explore before we come to a close?
Not that I can think of. I think we covered it pretty well, but no, man, I'm just like trying to live and learn every day. Like the book especially is like, I'm trying to flesh out my thoughts in there. And I love coming on podcasts because previously, like I'd be so scared to come on some podcasts. I was nervous before the podcast I did with you, because it's like, I have all of this stuff in my head, but I'm not able to say it yet. And I'm just grateful that like, one, I can be here now, and that I was on a year ago, because it just shows like, if you have some form of intention to improve certain areas of your life, they improve whether you like it or not. They just do. And you don't even realize it half the time.
Yeah. And the progression is so cool to witness too. If you want to see how Dan and I both expressed thoughts differently a year ago, check out episode 83 of this podcast. And I'm sure if we look a year from now, it'll be different as well. And that's the cool thing about growth. That's the cool thing about creating something, is it gives you a mark for where you were at that specific time. And I'm grateful for you for creating this podcast here with me today. It's truly an honor, an incredible time. The Danco, right? On all Twitter, Instagram, everywhere, TikTok too?
Yes.
Anywhere else we should send people in particular to connect?
I'm going hard on, like, YouTube is being kicked into overdrive.
Let's go. The thumbnails are so good.
Thank you, man. Yeah,
the videos,
we've been putting a good amount of time into those, especially recently. Like, we're toying with vlogging right now. So if you want to see the first iterations of, like, a vlog, go subscribe, and then it'll get better over time. But you'll be able to see, like, this growth process that we're talking about now, but in real time with the YouTube. So it'll be cool.
You know what I love is, like, we are slowly but surely becoming the people we admired when we were kids.
Yes.
Like, you creating vlogs is like, oh, Matt Ogis did this.
Yes, and exactly.
It's so cool. It's so cool, man. And I love to see that growth and that iteration and that change. I can't wait to see the vlogs, and I can't wait to see you just continue living out your purpose every day. Thank you for being here, man.
Yeah, dude, thank you for having me. This was awesome.